The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hi, welcome to another Yes to Life show. Yes to Life is a UK charity helping people with cancer to access and understand integrative medicine. And I'm the charity's founder, Robin Daly. As you'd expect, the show is all about integrative medicine for cancer in all its many, many forms. If you listened last week, you'll remember that I talked to Joanna Hill about the creation of the amazing Bagnall Centre for Integrated Healthcare. This week, I'm talking to another woman with an inspirational track record of creating change for those with cancer, this time specifically breast cancer. Way back in the 20th century, Sarah Davenport set out to create a new kind of resource for women and to fill a massive gap in care that she stumbled across. The word inspirational is no media hype and is the right word for the way she responded. I'm talking to Sarah over the phone about her story and about her newly published book, Reboot Your Health. Hi Sarah, very nice to be talking to you. I don't think we've ever talked before, but of course I've known about you for years.
Have you? That's amazing. Well, it's very nice to be talking to you too, Robin.
So the main subject for today's show is the publication of your new book, Reboot Your Health. But seeing as how this is a show about cancer and integrative medicine, I can hardly bypass the extraordinary story behind the founding of the Breast Cancer Haven, now a leading UK cancer charity. It's pretty rare that someone takes such a radical step as you did more than 20 years ago to pioneer a type of support that at that time was really pretty controversial. Can you just briefly start off by telling us the story and what prompted your extraordinary decision at that time?
Well, it was very extraordinary because at the time I was a 19th century dog painting expert, so nothing to do with health at all. And I had a tiny gallery, and all I sold was 19th century dog pictures. And I really, really loved it. I mean, it was just fantastic. I had lovely clients, loved my paintings, and, you know, I made pretty good money, really. And I thought I would be doing it for the rest of my life. And then what happened was a close family friend developed breast cancer, and I was probably about 30 at the time. Mm-hmm. And it sounds really weird now because we all know so many people whose lives have been touched by cancer. But I've seriously never met a single person who had cancer before. Never. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, I followed her treatment with her, I just thought she was this incredibly unlucky person because, you know, she never saw the same doctor twice. They repeated the things they did to her. They hadn't read her notes. They gave her drugs that made her, you know, she was allergic to. And the whole thing just seemed, well, super unlucky, I thought. And then what happened was, I think, what the universe does when it wants to draw your attention to something. So never having met a single person ever with cancer, every single person I then started to meet had breast cancer.
Right.
And every single one of them had a story very similar to my friend's. And so I thought, oh goodness, this isn't a sort of one-off poor unlucky person. This is actually what's happening fairly frequently. And for some reason, and I don't really know what the reason was, because, you know, I was a dog dealer and I knew nothing about medicine or health or I knew a lot about complementary therapies, actually. I got a sort of bee in my bonnet, and so I went to visit various hospitals and doctors, and I talked to nurses, And I talked to lots and lots of people who had, you know, been through the treatment. And I got two completely different stories. So on one side, the doctors and the nurses and everybody said, oh, look, it's perfectly fine. It's all very well dealt with. And the people who were actually experiencing what happened to them were very unhappy indeed. And so anyway, so then I thought, okay, so it just needs to be different. So somebody who knows what they're talking about can sort this out. So I'll raise the money, and then maybe, because what 20 years ago when I started the charity, things were very different, I think. And there were services out there, but they were really scattered. They were, you know, you had to travel a long way to get to, you know, have help with your wig or your bras or your whatever else it was that you needed. And actually, that's the very last thing that anybody needs to do while they're having chemo or radio. You can hardly stand up sometimes. So I thought, okay, so the obvious solution is you just have these centres where all those facilities are available under one roof. So I went to visit various of the existing charities and I said, look, I've had a really good idea and I will fund it. I mean, somehow I'll raise the money. But can you do it because you know what you're talking about? And they all said no as well. They said, no, it's all fine as it is.
Amazing, isn't it?
And that was kind of when I had to decide, you know, either I was going to have to do something about it or it wasn't going to be done. So there we go. That's what I decided.
Well, it's quite a decision, I must say. I'm severely impressed. Plenty of people have got sort of very dire personal circumstances that push them into these kind of things. And, of course, they're not necessarily have the capabilities that you've had to actually produce the cash to make it start. I mean, that's such an amazing start to be going out looking for people to say, hey, I've got the money here, here's a great idea.
And that was my complete nightmare, was actually asking people for money. You know, I thought, how terrible. But in fact, people were incredibly generous.
Yes.
And, you know, we raised the money in under a year, actually. And, people were just extraordinarily supportive.
Yeah, well, it was the right time. It was the right time for that move, wasn't it?
And now it's got six centres across the UK, and we've helped literally tens of thousands of people.
You must be very proud.
And it's all free of charge. So it's been really cool. It was good.
Mm. Brilliant. Well, look, that's a great story. Very inspiring. I mean, you know, I'm busy doing a charity as well, so I know what it takes, and kudos to you for your vision and your determination. So I haven't had sight of your book Reboot Your Health for long enough to read it from cover to cover before the interview, but I have had a power read and I've got a pretty fair idea what's in there. I'm going to place your new book under the heading of prevention, as it seems to me it's aimed at people who are still up and running, although not really all that well. So it would seem to be a handbook for avoiding chronic diseases such as cancer. Would you say that was a fair description?
Yeah, I would. So now I'm really on a mission to get people to get back in touch with their bodies, because, you know, if you sort health problems early on, you can absolutely stop them from turning into something more horrible. Mm. And one of the things, I mean, the two reasons why I wrote it, actually, because I haven't written a book before. And the first was, obviously, at The Haven, I talked to hundreds and hundreds of people over the last 20 years. And one of the things that struck me most was the grief and the deep regret that so many of them had, that they hadn't listened to their bodies. Mm. They hadn't heard them going wrong. Because, you know, if you pay attention when you get the, you know, you always get a little niggle. Your body will always tell you that it's, you know, things are not as normal.
Yes.
But the problem is nowadays we're all running so fast and our lives are so busy and we're rushing from one place to another that I think we rarely take the time to sit still and listen. And that's why, you know, you suddenly find yourself on your doctor's doorstep with a serious health condition.
Yes.
Whereas actually, had you caught it earlier on, you might have avoided that situation. And the statistics are really quite frightening. Cause
aren't they?
I think in the UK, if you're 65 years old, 80% of 65-year-olds have one chronic condition.
Mm.
And 68% of them have two. And, you know, more and more, the older you get, the more you have.
Yes.
So actually, I just think people presume it'll be all right, that they'll get to be 95 and they'll all be fine, and all the people who are sick are somebody else, not them.
Yeah.
But I just think people need to be aware. I think everyone's forgotten, because it's a bit like cooking, actually, I think. Everyone's forgotten. Everyone used to be able to cook, and everyone used to be able, they knew all the basics of health.
Yes.
But, you know, along have come supermarkets with their ready meals, and everyone would much rather just grab one from the supermarket than have to do the shopping, cook it, prepare it, clean up afterwards. And it's the same with health. We've given up that responsibility, I think, and now everyone just goes, oh, we'll go to the doctor. Mm. And as we know, the doctors are struggling under that burden. So, I just want to...
Yes, it's an uncomfortable meeting, really, of two movements. One is that, of course, we all have the movement towards an easy life. We all like that. And then, you know, business is always out to find ways to sell to us, and convenience has really come up trumps as being like the number one marketing tool in every area of life, I think, for getting people to do things that you want them to do in order that you can make lots of money. And convenient foods is a fine example.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about this book is that it's really fun. I think it's really fun. So, you know, even if it's not convenient, because it will take an hour or two of your time, but not much more than that, I don't think. But it's just a really fascinating thing to do. And so what the book does is it helps you to put together your health baseline, which I think is a fundamental, because to be able to observe whether, you know, what's going wrong and what's working and what's not working, you need to have something to start with so that you can track in the years ahead or the months ahead whether you're getting better from what you're doing or whether you're not. And that's whether you're taking a pharmaceutical pill or whether you're using natural remedies, natural plant-based remedies. So it shows you how to do that. And the first part, basically, is it goes through all different organs and all the body systems and explains in really basic, simple language what they do, and then it gives you a test to do to see how yours is working. So, for instance, the thyroid test. They're all basically very simple, very mainly free, and if they're not free, they're not at all expensive. Ways of finding out what bit of you is working beautifully and what bit of you is not.
Mm. Yeah, well, I like the hook, if you like, of trying to get people fascinated with the whole thing. That's really quite a different to the sort of you should that is around healthcare so much. It's, you know, the body, of course, is a majorly fascinating thing. And, the accessibility of information about our health has changed dramatically.
All I do is, my passion is health. So I read every book out there, and I read all the latest scientific, research papers and stuff. But actually, most of them are really boring, and it's quite hard to get to the end of any of them. And you know, as a general public, because I'm not anything except a general public. I just want to know what I need to do to get better. I don't want to know what chemical pathway will do this, and I don't want any of that. And so. So the book's really simple. It's simple language and hopefully really easy to understand.
Well, I can support that. It definitely is. It's extremely accessible, and that is great. You're right. I think that's what most people want. They don't want to become sort of experts on chemical pathways and things. They want to know, well, what's wrong? What can I do to get well? So, look, I'm going to go into all that stuff in more detail in a minute. I thought, before we go into it, there's a couple of little things in the introduction I wanted to pick up on and just ask you about. I'm going to read a little quote here. I believe it's worth keeping an open mind and listening to anecdotal evidence rather than being limited by more rigid conventional medical practice. Well, that's not politically correct, but that's okay by me. why have you written that?
I've written that because I feel really, really strongly about it, because there's so much anti-anything unless it's pharmaceutical by the professionals. And I 100% think we need all those, pharmaceutical things. I 100% back conventional medicine and all their processes, but I just think it's really worth keeping your mind open to other possibilities, to the possibilities that the plants and the natural medicines can actually make a difference really easily, and certainly early on they 100% can. And anecdotal evidence is anecdotal, it's not scientific, but it always starts as anecdotal and then becomes scientific. And one of the major problems for conventional complementary medicine is that they don't have any money, they don't have a budget, and scientific evidence costs millions and millions and millions to produce, and the pharmaceutical companies are really happy to pay and to, you know, support people looking for pharmaceutical solutions, because obviously they make a huge amount of money out of it when they find something that's successful, you know, and that's fine. But just to give you an example, if you think of statins that, you know, they're pushing them more and more for cholesterol.
Yeah.
And Lipitor, which is one of, I mean, it's just a single statin that quite a few people are on. I mean, that's brought in, I think it's more than £100 billion. Not £1 million, but £1 billion for Pfizer since 1997. So it's a very, very lucrative business, basically. And natural medicine doesn't have that budget. So the fact that there are less studies on complementary medicine doesn't mean that complementary medicine doesn't work. It just simply means there's no funding available to prove it one way or another. And what I value so hugely about natural medicine is that it very rarely has side effects. It's usually very inexpensive. And it's non-invasive. So I just think, open your mind, really. And the other thing, sorry to keep talking.
No, absolutely. Keep going.
The things that they used to say were loopy-poopy. You know, remember the Beatles and meditation. And,
yes.
You know, and acupuncture long ago. That was only sort of long-haired hippies did all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas now, the science, all these years later, and it is, you know, 30 years later, has found that they were entirely correct. It does reduce your blood pressure, it does stop stress, it does all sorts of things, which they can now scientifically prove. So one minute it's loopy poopy, and the next it's thoroughly acceptable, and the NHS is advising it for everybody.
Yes.
So it just depends what stage in the journey you're at. So I just wouldn't cut it out entirely. So that's why I wrote that.
Yeah, very good point. I think the you say 1 minute, but actually in that case it was at least 50 years. And that is actually the sort of time scale for things to become accepted. And of course, if you've got cancer right now, you're not going to be hanging around to wait for the science to catch up if something looks promising and harmless. So I think there's a very good case for, as you say, listening to anecdotal evidence. It's interesting, I wrote a blog post about evidence a little while ago, which was comparing the world of evidence for medicine with other areas of life. And it's a bit like the disconnect that you talked about when you're talking about the patient experience versus what everybody else who's involved in giving the service said. I tracked how basically in most of life, we've moved from initially just the people who made the stuff telling you how great it was. So then we got the independent experts, you know, there was at the end of the 20th century, we had the rise of the independent expert, and we all looked to them to find out what they said about things. But now, actually, we've moved way beyond that, and actually, anecdotal evidence is the thing we trust most. We go on there, we look on Amazon, you know, because we want to buy ourselves a radio, and if 80,000 people say it's the best thing since sliced bread, we probably don't hesitate, we just say, oh, I'll have that one then. And you know, that's where things have gone, but not in medicine. They still don't even ask the patients whether it helped them or not.
No, and the problem is that the patients rely so entirely on their doctors.
Yes.
And they will do exactly what their doctor says. And I think the problem here is very interesting, because I was trying to find out exactly how much time medical students training to be doctors were given in their lectures about diet and about complementary therapies and medicine. And it was really terrifying. So four different medical schools in the UK, and in their 5 years, it's 5 or 6 years, depending on which one you're in, they get between 2 and 5 hours, not days, not weeks, but hours, on diet and complementary medicine. So the point is that they just don't know about it. And so in not knowing, they don't advise their patients to do it. And I think that's a huge problem. And I've asked a few, and I've said, you know, have you had acupuncture? Have you had homeopathy? Have you tried reflexology? And they haven't. No. So for me, at Breast Cancer Haven, whenever I heard of a therapy that I hadn't personally experienced, and there aren't that many of them because that's what I spend my time doing, but I'd go off and do it because I could never, advise anybody unless I'd done it myself. Right. And and some of them work beautifully, and some of them are a load of rubbish, basically. So you have to know.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, anyway, I'm glad we went into that. I think it's a very interesting area and one which needs further pressure for change, I think. So,
yeah.
Back to the book. Okay, so I've got no hesitation at all in saying it's thoroughly practical, accessible, and it's an empowering book. It's absolutely rammed full of tips and stuff that you can do yourself at home, as well as those worth getting medical help with. And they've all got handy little icons to tell you which is which. But you've already mentioned testing. Now, to me, it seemed like your book, it's pretty much about testing. That's the kind of heart of it, in a way. And I'd say that testing really is the thing that's brought nutritional and naturopathic medicine into the 21st century. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree. But I think also that a lot of people are put off from the test. I mean, maybe that's one reason why they don't do anything early on. You know, perhaps they don't hear that their body's struggling. But even if they did hear, I'm not sure they know what to do. And the idea of tests kind of sounds like hospitals, doctors, slightly uncomfortable, painful, and a bit of a hassle.
Yes.
So I think an awful lot of people actually don't do anything early on when they could. But the idea of the test in this book is that they are that simple, that you get a really good idea of whether something's working or not. And I'm not saying once you've done your test, don't go to your doctor, but it's just go to your doctor with the information so that when you go and see him or her, and nowadays we know that the appointments are sort of 10 minutes or less, I think it's quite helpful for the doctor if you say, listen, I've done this and I've done this and I've done this. So the indications are that possibly my thyroid is struggling or possibly, my gut is having an issue. So it's intended to be really helpful and work hand in hand, with the doctors.
Well, look, I've got to say, that is one of the brilliantly striking things about what you have in the book, is that these tests, like you say, some of them are absolutely free, and some of them are clearly very cheap. And, of course, it's very easy to get into, some of these tests. They're done in exotic countries, and they're horribly expensive and complex. And they may be good, but people often wonder, well, should I do the tests or get on and try and do something to help myself? What do I spend the money on? So I think this is a bit of a breakthrough in terms of bringing together so many ways of assessing your health that are kind of manageable for people.
Yes, thank you. Because one of the other things that a lot of people have said often is that they get their test results from the doctor and actually don't understand a word of what he's saying. They don't know what any of the things are.
Right.
So I think one of the chapters in the book explains, if you get a blood test back, there may be all sorts of markers, but you don't necessarily know what they relate to or what the reading should be. So I do try to go into that a little bit too, because I find that very confusing myself.
Yeah, that's really helpful. You've got any idea how many tests you've got in that book? There's a lot.
No, I don't really. There must be 20 or 30, mustn't there? But there's also solutions, very easy, free solutions.
Yes, very good. That's what I was saying about it being so practical, really. One of the very striking aspects of the book is the way that it does bypass experts often and encourages readers to get wised up and to try some of the huge number and variety of practical solutions that you offer. So it's certainly not the way that medicine's been, but it does fit with the picture that the NHS is now painting of where we're headed. All the talk is about self-management, patient choice, all this kind of thing. So what do you see as the benefits of this direction?
Well, one of the main benefits, I'm sure, is that if you can persuade people to learn more about the way their body works and to experiment with the things that work for their bodies, because everybody's different, and what works for me will not necessarily work for you, so you do need to experiment with different things to find what makes you better. But one of the really obvious benefits would be that instead of at the first sign of a, you know, cough or cold, running straight to the doctor's surgery, you might open your medicine cabinet at home and experiment for a couple of days before you make that appointment. And in that couple of days, you might well get entirely better and not need the appointment in the second place. So I would hope that it would unburden some of the strain and the stresses that's obviously being felt at the moment by the health service.
Yeah, well, that's certainly obviously what they're looking for at their end. From the NHS perspective, from the government perspective, they're thinking, well, look, we can't do this. We can't even afford to do this. We've got to get people to look after themselves. And in a way, it's a sort of, well, it's your own fault, you could say, to the NHS for being so patriarchal and saying, no, we're doing everything, and you just lie back and take the treatment. There hasn't been any encouragement towards that kind of independence, but... I think it's a breaking realization that it has to come. And of course, yeah, I think it's a great thing that people actually can manage their own situation, feel empowered to do so.
Yeah, and I'd really like to see it in schools, actually, the book.
Right.
All the information, all the style of teaching, because I think if you can teach people at a young age, you know, they can monitor themselves from the beginning instead of coming to this fairly late.
Well, yeah, sounds perfect.
One of the things that I really feel strongly about is, you know, a lot of people have said to me, oh, I don't want to do my health because there's just so much to do, it's so overwhelming. But the point is, you don't have to do it all at once, because even one tiny step in a different direction ends you up in a different place. And it's really more about becoming your own health detective, I think. Just keeping an eye all the time for the signs So I think that's really important.
Yeah. So would you agree that while patients are increasingly embracing this kind of new approach, so far, unfortunately, very few doctors are?
Yeah, so far, very few doctors actually are. Though the naturopathic doctors, I think, are remarkable because, you know, they're all proper doctors, and they're all more interested in a holistic approach, and I mean that's where the future is of medicine, I think, with, you know, the two working hand in hand, and that would be an extraordinarily empowering model to be incorporated a little bit more, I think.
Yes.
But again, I think it goes back to teaching, so you have to go into the medical schools and teach the up and coming the young doctors, because if you think about it as a doctor, I was thinking about this the other day. If you're 60 years old now, or, you know, 55, 60 years old, and you're a GP, you were trained 30 years ago, and probably your training, other than pharmaceutical training, hasn't changed terribly much in all that time. So you certainly don't have time, because as far as I understand, every doctor is inundated with patients. And
yeah.
I read the other day that some people were having to see 40 or 50 people a day, which sounded unbelievably exhausting.
Yes.
So I think it's about education and experience, because when you've experienced it yourself, you go, oh my goodness. I always remember, this is a really weird story about acupuncture, but when I had my first baby, I was 26, I think, and I remember going to the doctor about 2 months after I'd had her, and I said, do you know, my brain doesn't work anymore. It feels really foggy,
yes.
Like I'm walking in cotton wool.
Yes.
And I'd always had a really sharp, clear brain. And he just said to me, oh, that's motherhood, you know, it's very stressful. So I sort of went away and thought it would pass. And it didn't pass, and it didn't pass, and it didn't pass. And about a year and a half later, I thought, I can't stand this any longer. This is
right.
Not right. And so I went to an acupuncturist, and I think that was the first time I had acupuncture when I was about 26, 27. And literally, I remember lying on the couch, and he stuck, I was lying face down, and he stuck a needle in the base of my spine. And as he did it, I could just feel this energy going zoom all the way up to my head.
Wow.
And it cleared the whole thing, and my brain came straight back, and I thought, oh my goodness, if I hadn't, you know, randomly found this person,
yeah,
I would have stayed with my foggy brain for the rest of my life, probably. So I love it all. I just think it's just so fascinating.
Well, I agree, and I think, you know, over the years, the tales I've heard, particularly from complementary medicine centres that are in hospitals, you know, is that they're always looking out for an opportunity where they can actually help one of the practitioners there, one of the doctors, because, you know, that can be a breakthrough moment if they can actually relieve something they're suffering from on the spot. It can often be, as you said, the very first time they've actually tried anything like that themselves. And, it sort of goes against everything in their training that sticking a needle in the bottom of their spine would make any difference. But when it works, what can you say?
And there are more and more of those clinics that do work together. Yes. And I think it's particularly powerful because doctors are doing their doctor thing. And then the support is being offered by a whole range of therapists who are all extremely practicing what they do too. And as a whole, it makes you better.
Yes. Great. Okay, so back to the book. Part one, as you said, there are 18 chapters there, each looking at different organs or systems in the body. So what made you decide to set the book out in that particular kind of way?
I wrote it differently in the first time, and then I rewrote it. I've written it about three times. But this was the simplest way, because I'll tell you exactly what made me sit down and write it, because I've been thinking about it for ages and ages.
Yes.
But I went to a literary festival about a year and a half ago, and I was listening to this Oxford professor of history talk about something. And I was sitting there thinking, he is literally a genius. You know, he is so clever. He knew everything about everything. And he could communicate perfectly. He was just utterly brilliant. And I remember thinking, oh, if my tutor at university had been like that, I might have been cleverer. but anyway, at the end of his talk, he stood on the stage and he was saying something else. And then he suddenly said, but you know, if you ask me about my kidneys, I couldn't tell you anything about them. I don't know what they do. I don't know where they are in my body. And he went on a bit more. And it was like a light bulb moment for me. And I thought, you know, this is the problem. People just don't even know the basics. They don't know what their liver does. They don't know what their thyroid does. They don't know where their spleen is or their pancreas. And so, because I'm trying to make it really simple, all of this, that was the obvious place to start, with explaining what each one did. But then the fun bit is the test that you can then check whether yours is working happily or not.
Yeah. So every single section has got tests, and it's got, well, if there's a problem, try this. It's got practical things to do as well. So, brilliant. I mean, you know, if anybody, this is nothing like a textbook. If anybody's in any doubt, you know, it literally is an easy read with just really hands-on stuff.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah, can I tell you about like one of the tests to give you an example?
Of course, yeah, do.
Well, only because I think this one's really fascinating too. So many of us have got food allergies nowadays, and a lot of people don't realise that they do have them. But almost, I can't remember what the statistic is actually, it's something like 60% of us have reactions to wheat, some people to dairy. I mean, those are the very obvious things, but also peanuts and shellfish and all kinds of foods upset us or can upset us. And people they're not necessarily conscious because, again, they're not tuned into their bodies. So there's this really cool test that you literally put a piece of the food in your mouth on your tongue and you take your pulse before and after. And if your pulse changes dramatically, if it goes up or down, then your body can't cope with that food, and then it tells you what to do about it. But I mean, that's really simple, really
free. That is really simple.
I think fascinating test.
It is. It's a good test. I can tell it's right. I can actually, when you're describing it, I know what it feels like, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and your other alternative is to go and spend an awful lot of money and have all of those, you know, the bloods done and everything else. Yeah. But here's your free test.
Well, that's right. And of course, you know, you can actually do something practical straight after that, which is try not eating that thing and see what happens. So that's also free.
Yeah. And keep monitoring and keep tracking. And eventually, you know, there'll be a certain level of that food that you can eat and it doesn't change your pulse at all. So it's just really helpful. Anyway, see how fun it is.
Right. Great. So... having done, been right through the body and all its systems, part two goes on about the measures you can take to boost your health generally, and starts off with the food section, all sorts of general do's and don'ts, and a couple of handy acronyms to sum it all up at the end, which are memorable. do you want to say a little bit about that section and what it covers?
With the acronyms?
With the acronyms, yeah, why not?
You know, I'll forget about that. Well, one is eat less crap, and just to go through it so it doesn't sound quite so facile. The C refers to the carbonated drinks. R is refined sugar, I think.
Yeah.
A is artificial sweeteners, and P is that really, really important one, which is the processed foods, which are probably causing more damage than most other things. So sugar's up there too. The whole chapter, again, it's very simple, but it has things that make a difference to your overall health, your digestion. So, for instance, like eating smaller portions, which sounds really, really boring. Mm. But what's not boring is how many of us actually know that your stomach is the same size as your hand when you clench it into a fist. So that's really tiny. And I don't know about you, but I have an awful lot more than that on my plate every time.
Yes.
Every time I sit down and have my supper.
Yeah.
And that makes your body struggle. So even cutting down the size of your portion so that it fits the size of your stomach, and chewing very, very well before you swallow is also vital, because that starts the digestive process off in your mouth and the saliva starts digesting your food at that point.
Yes.
Whereas if you just put it in and go gulp, you've missed a very valuable initial start of the digestive process, and you'll end up with much larger pieces hanging around for your stomach to try and digest later.
Right.
So there's all sorts of interesting things like that.
Mm.
There's
to put in there, make another little point about the book. Yeah, you've got an absolute mine of all sorts of handy ideas. I don't know where you got them all from, but I mean, I've never heard of a lot of them. On that subject you were just talking about, you have a thing called the full stop bowl, which is a way of...
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah.
so what the full stop bowl is it's this bowl with a really fascinating shape in the middle of it, which is the same shape as your stomach and the same size as your stomach. So that if you are, you know, used to eating masses and masses, you can put all your food in this plate and that's the size of your stomach. And you'll be shocked by how small your stomach is.
Yeah, I thought it was a very left field sort of instant idea, which is, very graphic, really. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you there. Do carry on. You were going to say a bit more, I think, about the food section.
I think one of the really important things is don't eat anything that didn't exist 500 years ago and you will be healthier, because all of the things that are not particularly, that don't work well with our bodies are the recent things, the processed foods, as I was saying, you know, the fats and the oils, the processed soya, we have salt on everything nowadays, and salt is not great for you. You need a little bit, but you don't need very much. And then the other issue that I feel very strongly about is organic or not organic. And that's a difficult one, because often the fruit and vegetables are more expensive. But I think it's just really, really important. We don't realise how many chemicals everything is sprayed in. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of the fruit and vegetables, you just eat it, and half of what you're eating is a nasty, toxic chemical. And those chemicals are really hard for your body to get rid of by themselves. So, you know, they build up. And ill health I think, is a cumulative affair, which is why the statistic is at the age of 65, bang, you know, chronic illness tends to develop in a large percentage of the population.
Yes.
So if you're not on the ball and if you're not doing all this basic stuff all the time, your body just gets overloaded. And one of the things that I feel really strongly about is, I mean, we wouldn't dream of not taking our car to the garage for a service, would we, for 50, 60, 70 years? I mean, you wouldn't dream of it because you'd know that it would, you know, the clutch would have gone, it would have run out of water and oil. You know, it really wouldn't work very well. But nobody spends that much time on their own bodies. So another reason I wrote the book was I thought, you know, every January when everyone's doing that New Year, New You thing,
yeah,
that kind of tends to only last for a week or two, this is an ideal time to go back to this book and see how you've done in the last year, you know, and track it. And then take your body to the garage, go to the doctor, or you know, sort out this or sort out that. But you've got a much better chance of having a, you know, healthy, happy body and living long and healthy, happy too. So I just think it's really easy if you do it more often.
And health is such a precious thing that we don't value it nearly as much as we should when we have it, and we tend to value it after it's going or gone.
And you've only got one body, so you know, if you don't look after it, somebody else is going to look after it.
Also,
on that depressing note.
Yes, on that, let's move on. You also cover the question of supplements versus a good balanced diet, which has to surely be one of the vaguest and least scientific moving targets around. Do you want to tell us briefly where you stand on this debate?
I really want to tell you because, funnily enough, I went to a lecture last week of a professor whose name I will not mention or what he does or anything else. But he sat there on the stage and he was just obviously and very clearly anti everything to do with complementary therapies, natural medicine. And he was talking about supplements and he said, supplements are, you know, a total waste of time. Do not put a supplement in your mouth. You know, you're just getting very expensive urine. He said you can get all of your nutrients from the food that you eat. And I disagree with that entirely, I'm afraid, because, again, as I say, you know, similar to the organic, not organic debate, everything is sprayed now. You know, the land has been stripped of all its nutrients. And I haven't got the statistics here with me, but there are papers and papers and papers on the fact that we have about, I think it's about a quarter of the nutritional benefits that our grandparents took for granted. So, you know, when they ate an apple that had grown, it was full of all the nutrients. And nowadays, it's much, much less. So I think it's really important to supplement. And I've seen people who've literally turned their lives and their health around, both mental health and physical health, purely nutritionally. So not psychologically, not pharmaceutically, but purely by upping their nutritional supplements and putting back into their bodies the nutrients that your body needs to work optimally. So I think you absolutely cannot underestimate the power of supplementation for your nutrition. But, I mean, I could say lots more about that too because I think that people get overwhelmed with the choice that's out there. So I think there's a handful that you could take every day. But then don't go mad because they're really expensive and also, if you have 22 to take every morning, you're going to sit there and go, ugh, and not put a single one in your mouth, I don't think. So the book has all sorts of advice about that and which ones to take. But, you know, really, really, I've seen it, and people need the nutrients, especially people who are ill. They really need the nutrients.
Yeah, definitely right. Okay. So you go on to have a lot to say about water, exercise, stress, sleep, environmental toxins, detoxing and more. We haven't got the time to go into all of these. Listeners who are interested, of course, they've got to go out and buy your book. But I wondered if you'd like to pick out just one of these areas which you think maybe is under-acknowledged as a driver of ill health and say why we should pay more attention.
Okay. Yes, I could pick them all out because they all play a huge percentage part in good health. But I think one of the things that people underestimate is the electromagnetic stress. I'd like to talk about that, I think.
Okay.
Because it's invisible electromagnetic stress. So that's the frequencies, the electric frequencies that come out of all those things we take for granted. So the washing machine, the microwave, you know, your clock radio by your bed. Everywhere there are frequencies that are not compatible with human healthy frequencies. So some people are much more sensitive to them than others. But if you're feeling really tired and exhausted all the time, it's definitely worth checking, you know, what's going on. And you can buy an inexpensive off the internet electromagnetic frequency gauge. Mm-hmm. And you can literally go up to the plugs and hold it there, and the needle will swing and it will give you a reading. And some of them are sort of, you know, in the green, which is relatively okay. But some of them are immediately off the red.
Right.
And we live in a soup of this. You know, all the computers are... You sit in front of your computer for 8 hours a day if you're working in an office or doing whatever you're doing.
Hmm.
If you're sensitive, it's draining you. So there are all sorts of steps that you can take to protect yourself from that and to neutralise it.
Hmm.
And it's like your mobile phone or your iPad. Even the light frequency that comes out of it. If you're reading on your iPad late at night, that's a blue light that wakes up your brain and your mind. So that's why a lot of people struggle to sleep. But there's all sorts of really useful things that you can do to minimise that. So one of my favourite things is this, was developed by an optician. And it's a plastic sheet that I have on top of all of my, you know, my phone and my iPad. And,
yes.
And you can't see it, it's invisible. But it cuts out the blue light, so I can sit happily reading till midnight. And then I just go zonk straight to sleep. So that costs something like £10. So it does cost £10 and it's not free. But it's not really very expensive and it's a life changer.
Sounds good. I want one. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, look, it is very interesting what you say about the electromagnetic stuff. One of the very first Yes to Life shows I ever did was with an expert on the subject from Sweden. And he gave two graphic examples to sort of wake people up a bit about these things. And he said, one of them is, he said, well, you know, I'm out shopping and I see a mother toss down her mobile phone into the baby's pram in front of her. And he said that's the equivalent of an electric train passing right by. And and then he also said that if you put a mobile phone on standby on the moon, not even making a call, it would be the biggest single source of that radiation in the universe from where we're standing.
That's really interesting.
Isn't it? I mean, you know, it just sort of puts it in perspective. I mean, there's no doubt about it. These things have an effect on you. Everybody knows that. It's a matter of whether it's damaging in the long run and whether you can cope with it. I mean, you know, the human body copes with a lot of things, and some people seem to cope with it fine and other people definitely don't. So it's quite individual.
But also, the time now, we're coping with far more things than anybody's ever had to do in history.
Yes.
You know, electrically, chemically, I mean, it's unbelievable that we're all standing up. And in fact, you know, perhaps that's why more and more people seem to be getting sicker. I mean, everybody seems to be... I talk about the walking unwell.
Yes.
Because everyone's sort of fine, but not quite fine.
Yes. Which is what your book's addressing, hopefully.
Hopefully, exactly.
Yes. Good. Look, one thing, we set out at the beginning of the show talking a bit about evidence, and we've got just about enough time to snick this in, but... I spotted the blue zones mentioned in the section about cholesterol. In terms of evidence about what really works, I think it's a fascinating initiative. For people who don't know anything about blue zones, do you want to just quickly tell us what they are and how useful you think the emerging information is?
Yes. So the cholesterol debate, or the cholesterol myth, really, is... there are various of these so-called blue zones around the world. There's 8 or 9 of them that they've studied scientifically, done all their research and everything else, where the people almost all the people live to be 100 and 110. And basically, everything that we've been told about cholesterol, which is, you know, cut down the fat, don't eat eggs, don't eat meat, all of that, those people live on that all the time.
Right.
And they have very high levels of cholesterol.
Yeah.
And they're living long and healthy to be 110 very regularly. So the latest science that's coming out about cholesterol is fascinating. It's total reverse of what we've all been told for a long time, which is there's absolutely no link between the foods that you're eating and cholesterol. And what they now think is that the very best cure for cholesterol is not cut out your eggs and your cream, it's actually up your exercise and walking, because it's inflammation that's causing a problem, and the cholesterol itself is not.
Yeah, interesting. So that's a kind of real life clashing with scientific evidence, as it's called, which has driven a whole industry for 30 or 40 years. I must admit, I find the Blue Zone stuff a lot more compelling than a lot of the stuff that's being produced and called evidence.
Well, I just think that statins are, as I said before, a very, very lucrative business. And as far as I can see, they're trying to get as many people as possible on statins for the rest of their lives. And again, scientifically, if you read the papers, it's really terrifying if you read the papers that they've done. And they do them. They are scientific papers done by proper scientific people, but maybe you don't hear about them. But you can be on statins for something like, I can't remember if it's 10 years or 7 years they did. And people are put on it because it's thought to extend your life, because you have this problem. And they found that at the end of it, it made probably a 2 or 3 day difference to your life expectancy.
Right.
And when you think of the percentage of people that have the terrible side effects, aching joints and digestive issues and mental issues, and you sit there and think, really? For 2 or 3 days of additional life expectancy? But people aren't told that.
No.
I think it's always really good to talk to your doctor and say, so what difference will this make to my whatever the question is? Because they'll always tell you. It's just if you don't ask, they won't.
Yeah, but sometimes they also tell you what they've been told by the marketing department. I have experience of being told absolutely outright that the opium-based painkillers, the latest round of them that my daughter was being given, had no withdrawal effects. I mean, a top surgeon told me that. I didn't know whether she was suffering from the medication or from cancer, side effects. So I just looked on the internet. There it was, just like, bam, millions of people talking about the withdrawal effects. And, of course, now it's a scandal all over the world right now. The number of people who are addicted to this stuff and the terrible, terrible side effects of getting off it. And, of course, the only...
But they're not side effects.
No, these are withdrawal effects of being addicted to this drug. But, I was told outright by the surgeon that there weren't any. And what he'd been told by the marketing department. He hadn't really found out for himself. So, that is a danger. When the motive is cash... The people who are actually producing the stuff are, of course, that's what they're trying to do. They're not actually trying to make people well, they're trying to make a lot of money. So, unfortunately, healthcare for profit is a very bad model, really. And it is the model we have, because it's underlying even our free health service is the people delivering the stuff are there for profit. And it's a very unfortunate set of circumstances.
And as you say, so if you don't take responsibility for your own health, you can't reliably rely on anybody else to be, to be knowing you as well as you know you yourself. So you have to take back responsibility.
Excellent. You've tied that back nicely into the subject of your book. Very good. You're right. I agree with you completely. Very quickly, at the end, you've got a blog where listeners can keep up to date with your thinking. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, so when I was writing the book, there's just so much information that I think people would like to find out about, and again, really simply and really clearly. And I couldn't fit it in the book. So I started writing a blog, because I've never written a blog before. But I've learned so much recently. It's been really fun. But so I started writing a blog, which is called reboothealth.co.uk.
Okay.
And I've just got all these lovely people who write to me all the time, and are very enthusiastic about it. And it's grown and grown and grown. But again, it just gives me an opportunity to go into different topics in more depth. And please read it. If you read it, if you sign up this week, I think it's this week and next week, you get a free e-sleep book, 60-page sleep book, which tells you all sorts of ways that you can get a really decent night's sleep, which everybody needs, and most people don't seem to achieve. So hopefully that will be helpful.
Very good. Irresistible. And where and when can listeners get a copy of your new book?
My new book is out this week, so they can go into the bookshop, go onto Amazon. Please, if you have a local bookshop, please ask if you're passing. Just go in and check they've got a copy, because the more inquiries they get, the keener they get to stock my book. So I just want as many people as possible to even know that it exists and get the message out to everyone.
Right. Okay, well, look, thank you very much, Sarah. We're going to have to leave it there. That's been really interesting, and I wish you the very best of success with your book.
Thank you very much, Robin.
I really enjoy hearing such a great story told in such a modest and down-to-earth way. I hope you enjoyed it too. Sarah's book is spot on for anyone who wants to start taking charge of their own health, but is worried about getting bogged down in complexity. And even if you're already a bit of an expert, there are so many great tips and techniques, you're sure to find things to interest you. Look on the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife, yestolife.org.uk, for links to material related to today's show. Just click on the Yes to Life show logo on the homepage. And if you'd rather arrive at the new year with the new you already firing on all cylinders, consider signing up for the Yes to Life 10K in October in London. It has its own website at yestolife10k.org. That's yestolife10k.org. I hope you can join me again next week for another Yes to Life show. Goodbye.